This is lecture 29 in the Practical Ministry Skills course. We're talking about raising and protecting money. This is part of chapter 17 in the Pastoring the Nuts and Bolts book. Our key verse, 2 Kings 22:4. Go to Hilkiah the high priest and have him count the money the gatekeepers have collected from the people at the Lord's temple. 2 Kings 22:4. Count the money. There is another verse that could almost be another key verse for this topic, and so we'll move right into it. It's one we've seen before. 1 Timothy 6, 9, and 10. People who long to be rich fall into temptation and are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. 1 Timothy 6, 9, and 10. Unfortunately, this applies to pastors too. There are some pastors who long to be rich, and it leads them into temptation, and they become trapped by foolish and harmful desires. And if you don't watch out, it'll plunge you into ruin and destruction. People who long to be rich fall into temptation, are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. You don't need the Bible to tell you that. You can just look around the world and see the kinds of evils that people get themselves into for the love of money. And it doesn't have to be intentional. Mishandling money, even by accident, can destroy your witness. It can destroy your ministry. It can destroy your church. It can even destroy your life, wind you up in jail. So, mishandling money, even unintentionally, can have results that are just as bad as if you mishandle money intentionally because you want to get rich. With that as a background, let's talk a little bit about churches raising money for ministries, raising money for your ministry. First, some say, well, should the church even ask for money? Shouldn't God just supply it? On very, very rare occasions, he might do something like that. If you've heard of George Mueller, who ran orphanages in England in the late 1800s, possibly early 1900s, he was famous for never asking for money, but just praying. And people would bring him money. But the people knew about the orphanages, and they knew about the need, and they could see those things. And that is so rare that everybody knows that one instance and can't think of any others. I think that entirely, absolutely, yes, the church should ask for money, because it's a part of how your people grow to become like Christ. Jesus was generous. Jesus gave. And so giving is how we learn generosity. Jesus trusted that God was going to provide his needs. And giving is how we learn to trust that God is going to provide for the things that we could have bought with that money that we gave to the church. The church should ask and teach and train people about giving. It's a part of their spiritual growth. But don't become dependent on individual donors. And I think we've talked a little bit about that. They can, if your church always depends on Brother Big Bucks for whatever is needed that doesn't come in the offering plate, number one, everybody else in the church is going to know that, and they're going to not bother to put anything in the offering plate because they know Brother Big Bucks will take care of it. And so they don't learn generosity and trust. And second, Brother Big Bucks may very well say, well, that gives me a lot of power and influence, and I can tell the pastor if he doesn't do or she doesn't do what I want him to do, I'll stop giving. And that can really be a scary thing for a pastor. So don't become dependent on individual donors. On the other hand, don't decide for people whether or not they might want to give. I remember a colleague, actually he was a bishop, telling a story about how when he was a young pastor, they were trying to raise money for something in the church, an addition or replace the roof or something. I don't know what it was. But he was going around and asking people to give, and he decided not to go ask this one certain woman because he knew she was a widow and she didn't have much money and he thought it would embarrass her, so he didn't ask her. And next Sunday she asked him, how come you didn't come and ask me to contribute that? And he kind of explained, well, you know, I knew you didn't have much. And she was upset. She said, I want the blessing of being able to give. I may not have been able to give much, but I knew I would get a blessing if I gave. You should have asked me. You shouldn't have decided for me whether or not I had the opportunity to give. So ask for money. Let people know the need. But don't use guilt and fear and greed to kind of try and motivate the giving. Guilt and fear and greed can motivate giving, but they're not fitting tactics for servants of the God of love who created and sustains the universe. In the Psalms, I believe it is, it says that God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, and it's not a big deal for him to sell one of those cows if he needs something. So don't use guilt and fear and greed to try and motivate people. The giving should be out of a heart of love and in sowing seed. When you're raising money, cast a vision. Let people see what you hope to accomplish with the funds that they're going to provide. People will give to a vision, to an idea, something they want to accomplish much more readily, usually, than they will give to, oh, we're behind in the budget. Teach about giving. And maybe I should have mentioned this first, because it should precede most of the rest of this stuff, but one of the biggest mistakes you can make is to avoid talking about money. Money is a huge part of the everyday reality of your people's lives. And if the church doesn't teach them a Christian approach to money, then the world will gladly jump in and take advantage. So teach about money, and as part of that, teach about tithing. Tithing is a vital part of spiritual growth. I think I mentioned this before. It turns the human trinity right side up. It doesn't make any sense to the mind. How am I going to be better able to meet my bills if I give money away? That doesn't make any sense to the mind. It doesn't make any sense to the body because the body says, yeah, but I wanted to buy all that food. But it's a way of showing that the Spirit is in charge. You are making the choice to put the Spirit of God in charge, which is where it belongs. Because the Spirit is what hears from God the right thing to do. The mind figures out how, the body does it. So teach about tithing. It's a vital part of spiritual growth. When you're raising money, when you're dealing with money, keep records. Keep records of the money that came in. Keep records of who gave what. If you're in a situation where they can deduct it from their income taxes, as is often the case in the United States, then you need to keep those kinds of records. But you just want to be able to know. As a matter of fact, watching how your people give can give you insight into their spiritual life situation. If their giving suddenly drops, it might give you a clue that they're running on some kind of a difficulty in their life that you didn't know about, where they really need some pastoral support. Or if they all of a sudden start giving a whole lot more, it could be that they've had a spiritual revelation. I had a colleague who, that was the case. He discovered somebody had all of a sudden started giving a lot more money than they did, and he went and asked, and the person said, I just had the most wonderful experience with God, and I am just so grateful, and so I wanted to start sharing like this. You need to know those kinds of things. It is amazing how often churches forget to say thank you. Ministers forget to say thank you to people who give. We can kind of almost approach it as if that's their duty and their responsibility, and if they don't give, then we need to come down on them. But if they do, then they're only doing their duty and we have no need to say thank you. But that's not the case. It's totally voluntary. These are people who could use this money for lots of other things. Tell them thank you. Tell them you appreciate it. Publicize results. If you are able to do something because the people were generous and they responded to an appeal and they gave, publicize. Congratulate them. Thank you. And say, look at the good things we were able to do because of your giving. And look at God's faithfulness to bring us through this situation because of your giving. So publicize results. Should you publicize donors? Should you make public the people who give? Some churches do. And so there's the regular people in the pews, and there's the pastor in the front, and then there's this big fancy box where Mr. and Mrs. Big Bucks are sitting. And the lady says to her husband, you sure know who the big tithers are around here. Some do that. And, you know, there is something to be said for publicizing that, because people learn from examples and testimonies. One of the greatest ways for people to be encouraged to tithe is for other people who have started tithing to tell what a difference it's made in their life. And I have never, ever known anybody who started tithing who wasn't excited about it, who wasn't happy about it, who wasn't happy, except possibly for a fear of public speaking, but who wasn't happy to tell people about it. But on the other hand, sometimes it can backfire. Acts 4:37-5:2. Barnabas sold a field he owned and brought the money to the apostles. Good thing, wonderful thing. That was a great thing to do. This is the Barnabas that later traveled with Paul on his missionary journeys. But apparently people found out about it. And so we go on, and it says, There was a certain man named Ananias who with his wife Sapphira sold some property. Okay, Barnabas sold some property. Ananias and Sapphira sold some property. Ananias brought part of the money to the apostles, claiming it was the full amount. He brought part of the money to the apostles, claiming it was the full amount, with his wife's consent. So she's in on it too. He kept the rest. And you may know the story. Peter said, why'd you do this? You know, it was all your money. It would have been a great blessing if you had sold the property and given us half of it, or, you know, a quarter of it. Or you didn't have to claim that you gave it all. You know, God doesn't require that you give it all. But what was going on was Ananias and Sapphira saw how people appreciated Barnabas' gift, and they wanted people to look up at them, look up to them the same way they looked up to Barnabas. They wanted people to say, oh, Barnabas and Ananias and Sapphira, aren't they all such wonderful Christian, holy, spiritual people? And they tried to buy that by deception. And if you know the rest of the story, Peter said, look, you're not just lying to me. You're not just lying to the church folks. You're lying to God. You're lying to the Holy Spirit. Incidentally, that is one of the passages that shows that the Holy Spirit is God. But anyway, when he said that, you remember what happened. Ananias fell down dead. And when his wife came in, Peter asked her, did you sell the money, the field for this much? And she said, yep, the whole thing. We gave you all, every bit of it. And then he told her what happened to Ananias, fell down dead, and she fell down dead. So it can be a dangerous thing. But even if you don't have people falling down dead, publicizing your donors can encourage people to try and make themselves look like they're big shot, really spiritual Christians. When it's actually for the wrong reason. So you need to weigh and balance those things in your situation, your culture, your people. Figure out how you're going to do that. Protecting money and yourself. When you protect the church's money, you protect yourself. Even Jesus had a situation with this. Judas Iscariot, this is John 12, it's talking about Judas saying that woman that broke that expensive perfume over you, he should have sold it for the poor. And John comments not that he cared for the poor, he was a thief. And since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself. This is one of the 12 apostles. This is one of the people Jesus chose. Wound up as a thief and stealing the money for himself. This is long before he ever had the idea of betraying Jesus. So it's important to have policies. Now with Jesus, he knew what was going on and he just let it happen. But you're not in that situation. You ought not just to let it happen. It's not good for the person who might fall to temptation. It's not good for your church. You're in charge of taking care of God's money. It's all God's money. So it's important to have policies that protect God's money. Protect you and your people from temptation. And protect you and your people from suspicion. Because even if you don't succumb to temptation, if you don't do anything wrong, still, if people see that you had the opportunity, some of them might think you did. So you need to be able to protect God's money, but you also need to protect yourself and the people in your church who handle the money from being tempted to do something like Judas did, and also from being suspected of doing something like Judas did. So, recommended policies, keep careful records backed up in separate places in case one set gets lost. At any time, you should be able to find out how much money the church has, where it is, where it came from, whether any is earmarked for a particular purpose, what was done with previous money. Have at least two people from different families count the money together. Whenever money's being counted or handled, it's best, but especially if it's counted initially, because once you know how much came in, then you can know how much you need to account for. So have two unrelated people that can watch for each other, that can vouch for each other. First, it avoids the temptation. If somebody has the money all by themselves, like Judas did, they might say nobody's going to know and slip some in their pocket. But if the other person is counting too and watching, that helps protect either of them from the temptation, but also from the suspicion. If somebody says, I think so-and-so stole money, then the other one who was there can say, no, we were counting it together and I watched and it's all here. Nobody stole any. Keep church money in a church bank account. It's the same kind of thing. If church money is in a personal bank account, then that person can go get it out. They may tell themselves they're just borrowing it and they intend to pay it back, but that can be a really deep trap and it might never come back. So if possible, keep church money in a church bank account. Separate the responsibility for receiving and depositing money on one hand from the responsibility for spending and dispersing money on the other hand. If the person who brings the money in and puts it in the bank is also the same person that can take it out of the bank and spend it, then it's easy for them to fall to the temptation of fudging the numbers. But if one person has the responsibility of depositing it and they don't have any way of getting it back out once it is deposited, they have to deposit the whole amount because somebody else was there with them counting it, so the deposit slip should tally with the count that the two unrelated people came up with. And then that person does not have the authority to get that money back out. The person who has the authority to get the money back out has to make their records tally up with the amount of money, the records from the person who put it in. So that sounds complicated, but it protects each of them from temptation and suspicion and protects the church's money. Monies paid or given to the pastor should be overseen by a group or committee of people who are not relatives of the pastor. You don't want anybody accusing you of getting rich off the church. Now, it's amazing how many people think that the pastor owns the church. And they think that's what's supposed to happen. But it's not what's supposed to happen. And it should be under authority. And have oversight mechanisms to assure accountability. Audits. Somebody from the outside that will go over the books. Or if not from the outside, at least somebody who was not related to or involved in dealing with money, who can go over the books at the end of a year or every 2 years or however often it is, just to make sure all the numbers add up. This is a way of finding mistakes and also of, again, if people know somebody's going to be checking on it, they're not as likely to be tempted to do something. It's God's money. It's God's people. It's God's ministry. You, as the minister, are responsible for overseeing God's money and God's work. And so take that responsibility seriously. See you next time.